everyone in the tech field wants to do three things: relax, automate, and get paid. There's no other tool out there that can make that more possible than D7. Go over to foolishit.com. Don't forget to use the promo code PodNutsShow20 to save an extra 20%. PodNuts would like to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeksters episode 97. I'm here with my two compadres, Mitch the Man Heyman, and in this corner, Tim Ingress Bauermeister.
Oh, man. All right, hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. I'm just the announcer in the white and black striped shirt. You guys can fight. Ding, ding.
You know what? He's the guy that usually gets beat up.
Who, the
guy?
Me?
Yeah, the guy in the middle, the ref. He usually takes a shot.
Oh, that's
true.
Never mind.
Fight back.
I tapped out.
Just step on a white line. That's all you have to do. Tomlin.
Are we Tomlin. Now describing ourselves as like the MMA podcast? Is that what we are?
No, this is Geeksters. No,
oh, is it? Okay.
New you, our listeners all suck.
We're not going in that direction. I'm really not that.
We don't want to bring none of the listeners against ourselves.
Oh,
don't be mean to our listeners.
We're like okay. No. Oh, because I don't want to say that about the listeners. But if we want to get like all MMA like in a self-deprecating way, like on ourselves, just beat ourselves up in a really brutal manner, I can do that.
Stop hitting yourself. Why are you hitting yourself?
I'm like the king of that.
It's
why are you hitting yourself?
Oh well, it doesn't matter why you're doing it. It's just funny.
It is. It's funny. It's funny every which way. But it's even better posed. I like posing as a question, like, why are you hitting yourself?
Well, I lost my keys today. I was hitting myself after I plowed the snow plow the driveway.
Oh no!
It was in a
garage. You lost your keys.
It was in a garage where I put them. But I can never remember where I put them. But I found
you needed one of those clips that go on your belt.
They don't make a belt big enough for my.
Oh my gosh! All right,
there was a story. I don't think I did this, but I think there was a story somebody on one of these podcasts here a couple years ago. I think they lost their phone or something. I remember what they lost. If it was their phone or the keys, it was like something really important while they were out. You know, the snowblower or doing something clean the driveway. And, gosh, what do I do? What am I going to do, guys? I think somebody came up with...
Call the phone.
Have they tried? I think somebody suggested... This is the great story. It's a pretty typical story, because I can't remember any of the details. But I think the best solution was get a metal detector. I think that's what somebody came up
with. Oh, sure.
That is bad.
I've been hit.
That's bad.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, I've been hit in the face with a snowball, and my lens has popped out. My glasses in snow.
You're never finding that.
I think I found it when it defrosted. Yeah, it was pretty bad. I walked around school. I was in high school, and so I walked around school with like a monocle.
Oh, and this was in high school.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor dude. I hope you got to move after that or something.
As if I wasn't teased enough, I walked around school with a monocle, but with glasses on.
Bimonocle.
A bimonocle. I didn't even look like the Peanuts guy.
Oh well. Oh man, that's rough. You know that happens to people all the time. You're in snow and you lose something. How are you gonna find it? You know.
You don't. No. That's why when I go to the snow, I wear Velcro, and then I just stick things to me.
It's like a Velcro suit. Just like a suit made of loops, and everything you have has the hooks.
Right. That's exactly.
You should get your wife like a loop suit. And you could wear the hook suit.
And
I don't mean like in a inappropriate way. Remember Letterman did that in the 80s? He had like a Velcro suit and he like would... Do you remember that? He jumped off the little trampoline and he would hang on the wall. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. The Velcro.
I could do that. Yeah. I weighed too much.
I was a big fan of...
It was like stick and then just rip slowly down.
Very slowly peel
right.
off, in accompanied with that extremely annoying noise for about a half hour.
Exactly, and that's just me slowly falling. Fat guy rolling down the Velcro wall. That's me. So how you guys been doing?
I've been well. Been well.
Yeah. Any awesome computer stories?
Oh gosh. I don't think I have interesting, cool one. It's been like a week of just
success.
Normal stuff. I was gonna say normal stuff, not success. About that for a minute. I usually have something.
I just had that real easy one when I was talking to Martin offline. They said it wouldn't go on. Their computer wouldn't go on. HP desktop. Can't remember the model number. But one of them slim tower type things.
This isn't the HP that you had that you were working on prior, was it?
No, but it was an HP. And I just pressed the power button in to release any residual power or whatever. It booted up, and of course, they didn't give me any passwords, so I had to crack that. And it had a couple mild Trojans on there, but nothing really bad.
No,
nothing at all. Cleaned it up.
What is your password? You know, you didn't let me finish. Password cracker of choice. Like, if you have to reset and add your password.
Sorry, I guess you didn't finish your sentence.
I didn't reset it. OPH.
I always said off crack. I love that.
I think it's only good if it's like less than 14 characters or something like that. And this was less. This was before. It was a 4-letter password, so it was pretty. It was quick, really quick.
4-letter password.
Yeah. A, B, C, D.
I've always used the offline cracker. It's offline. It's like the offline password reset or password.
Yeah.
Pulling up right now. It's by Pogo Stick. They just changed it. Yeah, it's the offline NT password and registry editor.
Okay.
That's the one I've always used. And I think the reason for that one is that when Windows 7 came out, this was one of them that I found right off the bat that allowed Windows 7 to be used. And this one also works on Server 2003 and 2008.
Is it quick?
It is very quick. It's a Linux base, so you boot up to it, and it just walks you through, you know, step by step by step, which one you want to do, where do you want to do it, what do you want to name it. You can either wipe it, either make it blank, or you can assign something. I've never had good luck assigning. I've always just wiped it, and it's been that much.
Yeah, I used a Linux base one. It was with one of those repair desks. I can't remember which. And it worked actually, but I just blanked it. It was on Windows 2002 machine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. This guy, he still uses it. He don't get online, but he had it packed away. Started using it again. He couldn't remember what his password was. So.
Yeah, I find that a lot with some of my clients is some of them have, summer homes and some have winter homes. And so they'll be here and then they'll move and they'll go back and I get a call. Hey, I can't remember my password. Usually these are people calling me from like Arizona. I'm like,
or Miami.
Right. It's like, I don't really know what to do for them. And then usually if I've messed with it, I've had to, well, what's your password? I don't know. So I make it something like password. So I'm like, try password. And then, oh, that works. I'm like, all right, well, let's reset it. You know,
these people are kind of close to my age, right? Or I'm closer to their age.
Sure.
Yeah.
Without, I don't want to, I don't want to make anybody feel bad.
I lost my keys today, so I'm doing that all the time. So.
Well, I do that. I do that normally, and I'm not that old. So nobody had anything exciting, huh?
Well, real quick, that tool that you speak of, it's limited to removing the password. It doesn't actually reveal.
No, this is not. Yeah, because it's easier on these hashes. It's easier to just wipe them clean than it is to. You can't crack.
Yeah, all the other ones. All the other ones that I have. That's what they do too. Except for OPH.
Right, Adam in our chat mentioned that he uses the one on Heron's Boot CD or Heron's Boot CD, which is this offline NT password crack, same one that I'm talking about.
The thing about the off crack, which I've always been a huge fan of the tool. Now, obviously, do we really, all of us, we really have to give the fine print? Okay. Look, we're all white hat guys. We're good guys. We use these for good things. Which obviously, if you're in this for any kind of, you know how to get around this stuff. So I don't need to say this, but you know, the tools, these are nothing more than a lockpick set in the hands of locksmiths here. So I always liked the off crack, because I just enjoyed the process of actually watching this thing go through the whole thing. It's not the easiest tool in the world. You actually do have to run off a Linux based CD. Runs as a live disk. You really do kind of, it doesn't, I guess that's what I like about it. It's not like kicking in a door. I mean, you actually do have to know how to pick the lock, or you almost have to know how to, with the movie where they're adjusting the dial on the thing and they're listening to the bits inside the lock tumble and they're marking down. You know, there actually is some degree. You have to understand what you're doing. And so I always kind of liked it. And based on the complexity of it, your success is going to be based on the quality of the rainbow tables that you're using. What are rainbow tables? I mean, C.1. It is a fairly complicated tool, and you do have to kind of know what you're doing in the process. And I learned more about what makes a good password from actually cracking them. And so I always loved that tool. But once again, it is dependent on the quality of the rainbow tables you have. And I haven't used it in a couple of years, and so I don't know if there's been any kind of development, if there's new tables available. I remember that the ones that they give you for free do work if the password's fairly straightforward. If it's complicated, there are paid tables. Have you used it, Martin? I've always enjoyed it. I think it's really cool.
No, I just have. I usually, if I need to come up with a long password or something, I use LastPass's password generator. So I don't know what the algorithm is behind that.
Well, I just meant if you'd actually just cracked any passwords with the office.
I just reset it.
Yeah.
I reset it to, I figured if it's good enough for the nuclear missiles, then 00000000 is really, it's good enough. And really, if I could get a briefcase or some luggage that had that many numbers on it, that's what I would make it.
You know, you need less password to launch missiles than you do to get into my kid's locker at school.
Exactly. Exactly. It's harder to get into my Android phone than it is to launch a nuclear missile.
You know what? To launch a nuclear missile, you should at least have as much security. You should have like the three dials, like on the little briefcase where you have the three dials on each side.
1, 2, 3, 4. Come on, people.
Yeah. Now, the thing about having the password is that it's unchanged when you give it back. Aren't there certain, I want to say, and see, I can't explain this, maybe y'all can think of something, but it seems to me like if you change that password getting in, then aren't there certain things that are dependent upon that in Windows that you lose some functionality? I was
always scared to change it. I mean, I've only blanked it once, and I'd rather call them up, but I worry about the same thing, too.
I don't know.
I don't know either, like, but... But what you can,
there,
like,
there was something I can't remember what that was.
But like there's the Windows way, or you can change the password, like get a Windows startup, Windows 7 startup disk, and you can go command line and copy a couple files. It's the one where you got to hit your shift key like 5 times and do it from the command line. I haven't tried that one, but that one's all Windows right there.
Isn't it like some registry ad you do from command line and you trick it into doing something with sticky keys or something? Isn't that it?
I don't know.
I don't remember. I did that once.
Did it work?
It did.
See, yeah. Well, this one is getting into the admin account. And from there, you can, even though you're doing it in a DOS environment, like, or a command line environment, you can change the password there.
I'll tell you what, actually, I think the best tool, one of my favorite tools, is, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out the fact that Door, unless something drastically has changed in the last whenever, it's against all these tools, I'm pretty sure it was Door, it's against all these tools, he feels there's no reason this should ever happen, that, either you should have this from the client, and that That was his opinion. I've heard him state it a number of times a while back. I'm not going to speak for him, though. I disagree, and not in day-to-day, but every once in a while, it's like, I got a machine here. I just have to log into it to make sure something's fixed. I'm not calling these people to track them down to get a password. And there is a tool I adore. And
Conboot.
I absolutely love Conboot. Go ahead, Mitch.
Talk I was saying, don't, it failed me several times.
So. Probably, was it, were you using the free one on Windows 64?
Yeah, you're right. They went to a paid one. Yeah,
and I think I bought the paid version a year or two ago. It was like $16, worth every penny. But Conboot basically it's a live disk. Bam,
bypasses it. It just
absolutely when the machine right starts up, it boots from the disk. The disk as it's running. excuse me. The disk as it's running makes a couple temporary. Changes to Windows, and when you come to the login screen, you just press enter.
It doesn't change a thing.
Bam! It goes right into Windows. I have experienced a problem where doing that. If you then create a new user account with a password, the next time you do boot up with the Conboot, that account will have issues. I'm trying to think. Because I did that to get into the machine to only long enough to create an account that I could work out of, like an admin account. I want to say that I'm trying to remember what the issue was. However, I usually do that, and I usually have really good success. So the Conboot's fantastic. Yeah, Windows Vista and the 64-bit architecture, when it started to become popular, the free version of the Conboot didn't work. If it's a 32-bit, the free version will still work. You do, but it works perfectly, so the paid version. So, but yeah, it boots up. You go right into user account. Bam. It's like the time that it takes me to use that, get in, figure out what I need, and get out. You know, that's the phone call to the So, I mean, there are times where I find these tools legitimate. I'm arguing Dory, who's not here, so, and he may be of a different mindset now anyway. So, once again, these are all lock set picking tools in the hands of lock.
I've never used. Now, is that Conboot? I see one that's Conboot, but then I'm also seeing a Conboot. See, I've never even heard of Conboot.
Yeah, I think the Conboot is that.
Maybe.
That's definitely KON. And as it boots up, it looks like some kind of Atari little ASCII graphics. It spells out Conboot. Right, doesn't it? And
yeah,
it looks really cheesy. Like, I can't believe this is a real tool. It's amazing. Yes, definitely KONBO.
Huh. All right. I found it. I'll put it in the notes.
That's cool. And I do like using that because it's supposed to. If you have to get in, if your only option was to either crack the password or blank it, this is a great option. You know, it just bypasses it, get in, do what you got to do.
Cool. Speaking of security, today is the second Tuesday of the month. Patch Tuesday!
Ah.
Insert party music here. All right.
As a matter of fact,
I know exactly. That sounds like I'm going to start yodeling or something. I'm not sure what that was, but
That was the music from the Price is Right game, the cliffhanger.
Oh, that's right. The
little guy climbs up the hill, and he wants to stop at the very end, and you know, and he always falls off the, you know.
That's because people who sometimes they're not the yeah. Anyways,
the best. It's the best music.
It is. Man, I gotta go find that. That'll just be my ringtone.
You know what? You know, all Price is Right music makes the best ringtone. I actually had a customer. I know what it was. Actually, the Price is Right music actually was my ringtone for my customers, like on my old phone. And so when I client call, you know, that music would would go off. And I was at a job once, and the guy called. I picked it up. His name was Robert. I picked it up. I said, "Hi, Bob. Why all these people are staring at their eyes were real big. They thought that the Price is Right music played." And I picked it up. I said, "Hi, Bob." As if Bob Barker was calling me on my phone.
Oh, wow.
He's supposed to come back for his 90th birthday on an episode or something. I think so.
All right. So I found it.
What?
There's a great website out there called, it's AUDIKO, and it has the
Price is Right.
Yeah, and it has the cliffhanger one in there. So I put it in our chat room too. But there you go, guys. Well, what I want to talk to you about on a more serious note is that it's Patch Tuesday, and that there are there's 11 bulletins coming out. 5 of them are critical, and 6 are closing potential remote code execution holes. So I think this is going to, of course, be our last one for 2013. Hopefully, we'll be getting more come January. But don't forget to patch as soon as possible, because these, it sounds like they affect everything from Internet Explorer to Office to Server Exchange. This isn't one where you can kind of be selective on. I would definitely recommend going out and making sure all your updates are done, make sure your servers are done. Get them up to date. We want to make sure that, you know, as time goes on, things are just getting worse and worse for computers and viruses.
13 updates on my machine upstairs when I came down, when I turned it off.
Wow.
That's not too bad, 13.
It could be worse, I suppose, but still.
It's Microsoft. What do you expect?
I know. But it's, you know, server core updates and all that kind of stuff. So these are very important. So make sure everybody does their updates. Well, this last week, you guys have probably heard me talk about it a little bit, but I had my first CryptoLocker experience. And it wasn't one of my clients. It was I was called in as a consulting job. So, you know, kind of a blessing and a curse as far as somebody did get infected with CryptoLocker. Somebody did actually lose data. But the blessing part is that it wasn't one of my clients. And so I got a chance to kind of watch it. I got a chance to learn from it, see what CryptoLocker does, see how it acts without having my data be compromised.
It was unfortunate without it having been extremely heartbreaking personally, is I think right.
I never want to see anybody lose over to 70,000 files. But
you were able to go home and sleep that night, you know.
Actually, no. I wasn't, because as soon as you see this, as soon as you start messing with it, and you start questioning, oh my gosh, what is what about my clients? What about my systems? What about my servers? What about, you know, things that you always kind of, everybody says it'll never happen to me. And so I was kind of in that where I know I needed to get it done, and I had done some of it, but not all of it. So that night I was really stressed out for a couple of days about it, just because it was such a big thing. And while I wasn't responsible for the issue, wasn't responsible for it, I was still called in to consult. And it's nasty. So I like to just kind of walk through the story, what I found, what happened, and where we're going from there, because I was actually there this morning kind of doing what are we going to do from now? How are we going to protect our data from now? File. I've also created, so people who are listening to this, who want just a, you know, just CryptoLocker talk, not the rest of this, there's going to be a Podnuts put out that I recorded that talks about CryptoLocker and basically the same experience I'm having now. But I wanted to get your guys' opinion, and hopefully you'll have some questions and bring up some ideas, and we can go from there. So on the 4th of December, so this was last Wednesday, so right after our show, I was called in the morning and asked by a former colleague whether or not I would be interested in just kind of doing some consulting for his wife's company. They have an IT guy, but they wanted some information. And he said, some crypto something. I said, oh, CryptoLocker. I'm like, yeah, I'll take a look. And that afternoon, they called me and they said, we really would like you to come down, you know, now. So I said, sure, not a problem. So I drove down there, and when I came in, their IT guys were already there working on it, and I went ahead and...
I'm sorry. If I can interrupt you for just one minute.
Yeah.
That was one piece of the story. I don't know that I ever got... What was your relationship to them, and how did you get called into this?
So how I got called in was the kind of the on-site tech lady there. Her husband and I used to work together at school district.
Okay.
And so he knew of me, knew what I did, and so he went ahead and just had her call me, and that's, you know, that's where we went from there.
Thank you.
So I showed up, and I showed up, and the computer had already been taken out of the building. So what had happened was, this is December 4th, so this is last Wednesday. On the 27th, which would have been the Wednesday before that, so that is when the initial infection happened. So the infection had been running through their network for almost a week. And what happened was, is that the only reason they knew about it, or only reason that it raised suspicion, was because the files had been, the file names and the information about the files, which are normally black, had been being compressed. And when they're compressed, they actually turn blue. The lettering turns blue. So if people were noticing the lettering was turning blue, and then they were noticing that after a while, closer to the 4th, they were noticing that they actually couldn't open up the documents. Some of the documents wouldn't open. This company has probably 1.5 terabytes worth of data. So it was just really just luck that they were noticing some stuff, and I'll get to why in a moment.
Unusually perceptive from a client.
It really is. It really is. So all the clients had mapped network drives back to the server, which is normal. I mean, my clients have mapped network drives back to the servers. You know, that's, you can save data and move data around. But the gentleman had received an email from, I think, UPS. Stating something. I don't know what the email was. I'll just know it was an email from UPS. He clicked on it. Nothing happened. Well, what really started happening was CryptoLocker. So it works on infecting his whole computer, then jumps into the network drives, and then starts infecting that network computer. So how their systems or their servers are laid out is they have 4 servers. They have a primary domain controller, which has all of their shares on it. They have a secondary just data server, and that data server is just for file replication. So all the shares on the primary server then just get straight copied over to the secondary server. There's nothing else going on. It's just a duplicate copy. Now, it's not a copy of the operating system. It's not a copy of, you know, Active Directory. It's just a file copy, okay? From there, from that server, Symantec Backup Exec runs. Now, of course, with 1.5 terabytes of data, that would take a long time for on tape. So what they do is they're running backup to disk, which is essentially take all the tapes and put them together on one backup, and you just put them on a disk. And so they have a NAS running, and the NAS is connected via a shared map drive again to the server, and they do the backups onto that. The other 2 servers they have is an accounting server that runs a proprietary accounting software, and then they have a print server. So what had happened was, when I got there, they kind of informed me of where they were standing. Main computer been pulled offline, down actually in the gentleman's car. Data on the server, the primary server, the main shares had been corrupted. Of course, then replication happens, so it pushes it over to the secondary server, which had happened, and then the virus then traveled into their backups, and it actually encrypted and compressed, or compressed and then encrypted all of their backups. So their backups were gone. So we kind of had to stop and think, okay, they had not been prompted yet for any type of ransom. And after talking to Nick Shaw about this weekend, what happens with CryptoLocker is that it has to completely run the full course before you get any type of encryption or any type of ransom notice. So because we had pulled this computer offline, we had essentially taken, you know, the mothership offline, because that's where the main infection was, and from there is where it kind of spreads out and talks back to that main computer. Since that was gone, the infection had actually stopped, if you will, propagating. It didn't know what to do. It didn't know to move forward. And we had watched it during the day. We ended up having to start in a spot, and we just had to find how and what was encrypted, because we needed to know what was good, what was bad, if anything. And we ended up just clicking and saying, "Oh, this is encrypted," and clicking and saying, "Nope, this is not," clicking and "Yes, this is," and "This is," and "This is," and coming to the conclusion after looking at it for quite a bit of time that it starts to encrypt in alphabetical order. It's not worried about timestamp. It's not worried about anything else. It's all strictly alphabetical, which I never would have thought of. I kind of would assume that it would have maybe, it, to be most destructive, would have worked its way from timestamp backwards. You know, so your newest stuff would be encrypted rather than your oldest stuff first. So as it moves through, of course, then this is kind of one of the things that saved this company was how much data they had. As it moves through, you know, you have file A, and then inside of file A, you may have file A, and then inside of that, you may have file B, and then inside of that, you may have file A again. So it goes through all the subcategories, you know, all the root folder and the share, and then all the way down, and then all the backup, and all the way down. So it's completely alphabetical within all of the shares. And so it had gotten about halfway through the list of shares, but then in one of their projects shares, it had gotten only through the first, like, the C's of that, and then everything below that was still good. We found a tool called Crypto... I lost it. I'll find it. Crypto... No, that was one of them. So... Right off the bat, one of the first things we did, once they got a hold of me and they said, you know, this is what's going on, I said, we need to get CryptoPrevent pushed out. So the two techs went ahead and started walking around with thumb drives and putting CryptoPrevent on every single computer. There's not that many computers. There's only about 30. So they were able to do that really quick. While they were doing that, I had come across some stuff earlier about how to prevent this within group policy. So if you don't have to walk around with a thumb drive and put in CryptoPrevent, you can walk around, you can do the group policy and push that out. So they did that. I did the group policy. Then that's when we really started. So once that was done and we were like, okay, so we can kind of stop and take a breath, we started to look at the file. And what I found was one called Omni Crypto Finder. And what this will do is you can actually start to scan directories, and it'll tell you whether that the file is encrypted, whether they're not sure it is, or no, it's not at all. So once we had gone through our list and found out what was encrypted and what was not, we used that as well to confirm those what our findings were. So they didn't have, those were their backups. I'm going back to the servers now, but they didn't have any other backups. They didn't have any offsite backups. They had nothing. So as of right now, we're standing there, we're talking about this, and they have no data. One of the options was, well, what if we hook the server, the computer, back up to the network, let it fully encrypt everything, and then pay the ransom? The problem was is that there had been some talk about, well, what if the ransom doesn't get paid? Or what if they don't accept the ransom money? What if, you know, all these things of, we're... You know, if it doesn't work, then now we've really kind of, you know, we've infected the whole network hoping that it'll work. And we chose not to. We had the owners of the company in there. We talked about this and they said, no, we're willing to not do that and just kind of eat the data loss.
That, you know, on the surface, that is a pretty insane, crazy, ridiculous thought. However, this was a pretty big deal. This thing is new. Nobody, you know, there is no course of action. There's no, you know, standard practices. What do you do when this happens? So everything's on the table. I mean, you look at every option, right? And so, you know, I just say that because, you know, if this was anything else, I'd be like, well, that's nuts. Why would you do that? However, this is very unusual. So let's consider, you know, it doesn't cost anything to just consider every option. And, you know, oh, I hate this phrase, but I mean, that actually is thinking outside the box, you know. Well, and I mean, it, assuming that the bad guys come through, it would resolve the problem. Right, yeah. Martin? I mean, I'm just kind of...
Well, that was the thought, yeah. Was, you know, but it had been a week, and they had lost so much data already, not all of it, so were they willing to risk all their data for maybe getting some of the data back?
I guess that I'm thinking that if you didn't rescue what was left, at least back it up somewhere safe so that you had it in case... It's not like everything if it didn't happen. Right. Then let this thing just follow through to its, you know, end. And what exactly was the deal? I mean, that's the point, right? They do this, it's ransomware, they want the money, and they give you the key, and it gets unencrypted. At what point does that actually happen? Was there any instruction to get with to follow up on this? It's not like the FBI virus where it gets right in your face and wants money. I mean, does this whole process have to complete, you think, before you're contacted, or what happens here?
Yeah, it does. It has to complete. One of the things we found was that we took the computer that was infected, we brought it back in, no Ethernet, no internet, we plugged it in, turned it on, and we saw that the executable was running both a 64 and 32-bit executable in the background. You could look at it, Task Manager, and a box kept popping up. But the box was blank. It didn't do anything because it was trying to actually connect to the internet. Because as far as the crypto locker knows, that computer being off the network was done. It couldn't see any other files that were not encrypted or not, you know, that were still good. So I have a feeling it was trying to bring up the pop-up box to bring up your ransom you know.
In the app data folder, isn't it?
You mean where the virus resides? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the virus will reside in, Right, so what CryptoPrevent does and what CryptoLocker, is that it stops executables running from the app data folder,
right?
Any subfolders in the app data folder, and then any executables in a WinZip, WinRAR, 7-zip, or just a zip file inside of the temp directory.
You can control that with group policy editor. Isn't that what Nix does? It just does it automatically.
I got a chance to talk to Nick this weekend in Iran. What we're talking about by him, and he said, yep, that's exactly what it does. So the pop-up box, he has a feeling that it was the same thing that I was talking about. And yes, his application does what the group policy manager prevention toolkit that it walks you through does as well. So you're exactly right, Rich. So once we had figured out what was good and what was bad, they didn't have backups. We went out and purchased some hard drives. So we have a hard drive now that has, as of, you know, last week, all of the good data and all of the bad data. Now we went ahead and copied over all the encrypted data just in case in the future somebody comes up with kind of the catch-all unencryption, you know, product that'll reverse all of this.
Don't hold your breath.
No, I don't think anybody's holding their breath, but really
it's 256 bit. I think.
Well, yeah. You go out and you spend $60 on a terabyte hard drive, you move all this stuff to that, and you just put it away.
Right, right.
It's not, you know, if it were to happen and you didn't have the data, you know, so.
Now, real quick, now, I believe there was, maybe it was in the UK, like a police department, they got it, and they I think they paid it. Somebody posted that on Google Plus or something.
Yeah. Well, I walked in today because today was kind of the day where we said, okay, we're kind of getting back up and running. What do we need to do to keep this from happening again? And then how do we back up our data? Because they don't have any backups. And when I walked in and was talking with the lady, she said, you know, another friend of their, or client of theirs, because they're a construction company, a client of theirs was infected, got the ransomware, ransom warning. They did pay and they did get their data back. So, and that had been just just within a week. So, today I was in because we needed to figure out where we're going to go with this. And one of the things that Nick had brought up, which I had heard about, but it was nice to hear directly from him, was that OpenDNS sees some of these signatures and OpenDNS actually blocks this. So if you're using OpenDNS at home or in your business, things like that, it will block the crypto locker. And so they had not, so this company, the other thing that had happened, and I didn't mention, was that they had permissions set somewhat correctly. And now I think all of us as techs don't have all of our permissions set exactly, because there is that thin line between security and usability. And a lot of times it's just easier to instead of really trying to get very granular about our security policies, what we do is we just say, fine, we'll just let you do it. You can be the admin and we'll just, have at it. This gentleman was fairly new and he did not have access to the admin server. And so nothing on the admin server was encrypted. So it does matter what your security level is, whether or not you get a chance to, your data does get encrypted, or, from CryptoLocker. So today we kind of just sat down and said, well, where are we going to go from here? They had no offsite storage. They had nothing. All of their stuff was gone, because it didn't matter what date their last backup was. So this happened on the 27th. They did have a good full backup on the 23rd, but it didn't matter because the 23rd was completely encrypted. We had Symantec look at their encryption files and say, yep, it's encrypted. There's nothing we can do about it. So they lost a lot of data. So today we sat down and we got them hooked up with CrashPlan, get some offsite storage, some cloud, some cold storage. And we had talked about this briefly last week about storage via a mapped network drive, which CryptoLocker can jump to, versus a cold storage. Now, cold storage being something like CrashPlan or Carbonite, where you have an application that runs and that backs up that data offsite, and not through a mapped drive. When talking to CrashPlan last week regarding CryptoLocker, I said, here's a question that we have, though. So you have file, my recipes.doc, my recipes.doc gets infected, but my recipes.doc is supposed to be transferred up to Carbonite or CrashPlan. So that gets transferred up there. Now, really what you have is all you've done is just copy over, right? The virus isn't going to spread up to CrashPlan or Carbonite, but you've taken your data that's useless and you've made a copy and you've backed that up off site. And I asked them about that and they said, well, no. They said CrashPlan does look at the data structure and the data integrity. And if it finds that the data is encrypted or has some problems with it, it will not back it up and it will actually notify you that your data is, so there's something wrong with it. So that is good, which means that, you can always have a good copy in CrashPlan without ever overwriting it with a bad copy. So that was good to hear. That was good, definitely good to hear. They're going to continue to use their Symantec backup, the backup to disk on site by making local copies. The other thing they wanted was they wanted two offsite copies. So we have CrashPlan. And the other thing they're going to use then is they're actually taking a computer and they're going to go house it at the technician's shop. He actually has a shop and it's going to be dedicated for them. And what they're going to run is they're going to run that BitTorrent sync to take the data. Now, BitTorrent sync, of course, will not do any kind of checking the file structure, checking whether or not it's a legitimate file or integrity of the file. It's just going to copy it over. So the goal here is to be able that they have two offsites, but the CrashPlan or the CrashPlan is going to be the one that should hopefully keep the integrity in check. Whereas BitTorrent Sync, if you have a bad, if myrecipes.doc gets infected, BitTorrent Sync is going to copy myrecipes.doc straight on over, right? But we're hoping that, this is going to work out. This is going to work out well for them. So we've been, and then we implemented OpenDNS today. They've been wanting to do some content filtering, but they didn't know about this. And all of this was actually really new to the technician that was there. He had never heard of CrashPlan. He'd briefly heard about OpenDNS. He had never heard about BitTorrent Sync. So today,
clearly I got a chance. Not a listener.
I'm hoping that he learned some stuff during all of this. My time there has pretty much come to an end, except for my billing now to them. But, you know, I think in a couple of weeks, what they want to do is probably after New Year, sit down, think long term. How's this going to work? Where are we going to go from there? And there's really not a whole lot more to talk to them about, because we've kind of really hashed a lot of this out. We've spent many hours at a drawing board and at you know, papers and just via email, really getting this all hammered out and thinking, you know, because they're thinking about what do we do now. I'm thinking about how are we going to fix this in the future. And I'm also thinking about, well, what can I do to prevent my clients from getting this? So last Saturday, I actually ran around and hit a majority of my clients up in the Vancouver area and put CryptoPrevent on every single computer. If they're hooked to a domain, I've already gone through and done all the domain settings. But yeah, if you're on a domain and you install the domain, the group policy settings, and then you turn around and put CryptoPrevent on, you're just doing the same thing. So that's fine. Me as a tech, I would rather have that than assume that the other one has been done.
Fascinating.
So that's been my crypto locker experience. You know, make sure you have, you know, OpenDNS is free. I mean, it's either, you know, so there's, it's a great tool. Is it foolproof? No, you can definitely get around it. But, you know, if you just let your clients just, you know, you just hook it up for your clients and say, here you go. It's a great way to keep, you know, people from surfing stuff they shouldn't surf as well. If, you know, maybe that's part of your job is to make sure that, you know, you're doing some kind of content managing. So between, you know, CrashPlan, which, and then OpenDNS, they should be, sounds like they're going to be in a better place. And between those two, the total cost for all of that was not including my time or any of that, just CrashPlan and OpenDNS was less than $150 per year. So they really could have, you know, it's very inexpensive to keep yourself away from this very expensive, both monetarily and, you know, loss of data, this virus.
Did this company, so did they have good backups in place originally, or were the good backups corrupted by, unknowingly corrupted as this thing, over time, as this thing had done damage?
They did have good backups, but of course, like I said, the backups were attached to a map network drive, and CryptoLocker jumped it. So CryptoLocker took out their backups, and they didn't have anything off-site. So they might as well have not had any backups.
I got you. Okay. They had good copies of the data. However, those were available.
So right.
Everything else.
Right.
Go ahead.
And then I was going to say, and this comes in as a UPS tracking number, a FedEx tracking number, or a banking statement. And the problem is that we're coming up into the holiday season. So a lot of people are buying things online. And a lot of times, you know, some of them say, you know, here's a from FedEx, here's your invoice. You're like, invoice from FedEx. I didn't order anything from FedEx. But, you know, we just want to make sure, you know, a lot of this, and I was talking with this lady about it, because she says, well, how can we keep this from happening? How can we confirm that all of our data is good? How can we, you know, a lot of how do we move along in the forward with this? And, you know, there's only so much as techs we can do to protect their data. You know, probably 30% of what we can do, the rest 70% needs to be user education. You know, have people not click on links, have people not go to places that they don't know. Question it, because that one person clicking that lost them 3 days worth of work, which was probably close to $1 million. They're a big construction company, and it lost them 70,000 files.
And I don't know if you mentioned this, but fortunately, the individual that did this, his account had somewhat limited permissions, which helped limit the data that was available to the
correct
virus. So that was a very interesting point. That was something I had not considered. It seems to me like if the thing's in, it would have full reign, but that wasn't necessarily the case here.
Right. No. Yeah, he did not have full reigns. He had some, but you know, you end up having, you know, just a bucket share, if you will, of just a whole bunch of data for a lot of people, and that's what was encrypted, or you know, that's what got infected. Now he may not have needed, you know. 15 of those folders to be accessed to, but they did because he had permissions to it. So, you know, one of the things that you need to do as a tech is make sure that you have permission set up correctly. And maybe that means spending the extra time and separating not just physically like they did with the servers, but, you know, an HR folder, an admin folder, whatever type of folders, and really think about who your people are that have access to them. Now, you know, we're talking about one guy who is new who didn't have access to that. What if the president of the company or the CEO, something like that, clicked it? Then there's nothing, you know, that's where user education comes in. You can, as techs, like I said, we can only do so much to protect them. We can only put products in place that work when they do, but there's always going to be that weakest link. There's always going to be that, you know, the human interaction is always going to be the weakest link in any of these things. And that's why user education is so important in these instances.
Martin, now, does CryptoLogger, does it look for these files in specific places? Am I correct?
Well, it just starts encrypting data.
It can be anywhere?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like in my documents.
Nope.
Gotcha.
Desktops, my docs, music, whatever. Wherever there is, you know, and there's a list of some sites that I have come across. One of them actually is from the University of Oregon, which is the Beavers right down the way from me. And there's also one from bleepingcomputer.com. That has, you know, the Bleeping Computer one's actually really nice. They do a lot of stuff, and they go through quite a bit of stuff, and they actually have some lists of emails that come from CryptoLocker, like UPS, your package is available, ACH, like a payroll, you know, like a payroll invoice. But it actually goes through and talks about it, and I'll put both of these in there. But it did look like there is a set of certain file types that it's looking for, but all the file types they're looking for are Word documents and Excel documents and your Outlook documents and everything important. You know, it's not going to go through and try to encrypt DLL files. You know, that's going to hurt, but it's going to be kind of annoying. Yeah. Exactly. So both of these links I just put in the chat, and I'll have definitely in our show notes are, you know, one's from Oregon State University, and Oregon State University actually has the OSU OSL, so it's the Oregon State University Open Source Lab. They do a lot of stuff with open source, and they have a very big technical department there, and it goes through a lot of stuff of what to do. And they actually mention, you know, how can I avoid this? Go to foolishit.com/download/cryptoprevent. You know, they'd recommend Nick's tool. The Bleeping Computer recommends Nick's tool and what to do with it. Got it. Like I said, I got a chance to talk to him over the last weekend, confirm my what I was finding with his findings, and he said yes, that is what he's finding. And I asked him in a couple weeks once things kind of settled down, because he's been really, really busy, if he'd be willing to come on and just talk some more about CryptoLocker and what he's found, anything new. And he said sure. So I'm hoping probably after the new year we'll have Nick on again, and he can give us some rundown.
And he's a sponsor of this program too.
Yes, he is.
See? Why? What products does he have?
Well, he's got D7, D-Uninstaller, of course, CryptoPrevent. The difference between the paid version of CryptoPrevent and the free version updates. Is that the updates. So the free one, you have to go in and manually update, but the paid one will automatically update for you. So right now he's on version 6 of his one, and I haven't seen a new one in a while. I don't know what a while means. It may only be, you know, 3 weeks or so. You know, I don't think this is going to slow down. I think this is going to get bigger. A lot of thoughts out there about, well, you know, it's going to get smarter, so it's going to start encrypting your data. If it sees that you're backing up offline, it's going to start encrypting that data as well. So really, you can't get a good backup because it's always going to be encrypted. But that's just people thinking. It's not true right now. But
do you know the origin of CryptoLocker, Martin?
No.
It'll be very interesting to see where this thing came from.
If it's right. Chinese or Russian or...
wonder. Or if it was just some proof of concept that's around with and it got out. I would imagine there's a lot of this kind of stuff that people are just playing around with in their basement. There's a lot of other people who would love to make money in this way. All you need is the guy in the middle.
Us. Well, not.
No, not us.
Well, not us. But, I mean, not us. Now watch, I'll get infected more.
Well, did you put Crypto Prevent on your computer? No. Oh, the other thing, Crypto Prevent so far does not infect Mac or Linux boxes.
Yeah.
So
right, and now certain versions of early, like right versions of Windows, isn't it? Like going back
95.
If the main culprit is emails, you know, I use Gmail, and I'll get maybe 4 to 6, and some days nothing. You know, in spam. I'll look at, I don't open it up. I'll look at it just to see what, a lot of it's Chinese, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
But yeah, but now, say you have a Windows virtual machine, like I have a Windows virtual machine inside of my Linux box that I use for testing, I can get, that virtual machine can be infected. The other thing is Sandbox IE. That you can use that to not get infected, because if you do get infected, it's not going to spread, and you can just wipe that out. I have not used Sandbox IE. I know Mitch, it sounds like, I know you have, but you can wipe out that sandbox, right, and just recreate it, because you're not
well
within the sandbox.
The way I have it set up,
kind of a copy, right?
The way I have it set up, where normally you can set up, like when you close out, it's going to ask you if you want to download. Like it's like, let's say if you're in it, you want to download something, it's going to actually go through the motions like it did download. When you close out of the program, it's going to ask you if you actually really want to. I set my wife up where she doesn't have that choice at all. There's nothing she could do that she can possibly download anything. I just took it all out. So when she just closes out, it just closes out. There's no way she could, I mean, unless there's something wrong with the program. But I've tried to get infected before. I've never gotten infected with it. I mean, I would not literally, well, yeah, okay, I tried. Not going to tell you how, but
yeah, we don't want to know.
Yeah.
Well, I do know that you can get the crypto locker from Steve Gibson if you're interested at all.
Yes. I never did go and look at that. Probably best for myself. But is it still available? I know that he did make it available. You know, for anybody who wanted to play around with
there.
It and play with it.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, that's what I'm assuming.
It was available anyway. That, you know, the thing about this is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not. There's nothing revolutionary here in where it comes from or how you get it. As awful as this thing is, you know, it really seemed like when you know we first started hearing about this and everything that it does. It really sounded like this could be the end times in some ways, and that's not to downplay, you know, the effect that it can have, but the way you get it, or you know, the way it infects, there's nothing new here, right? Essentially, it just we're talking about an email. You know, people have been getting crap from these emails, UPS or what have you, you know, forever. This is very much the same thing, right? You get the email, you click a thing, it's tricking you into running an executable, and it's off the races, right?
Right, because it's actually, you know, file.exe.pdf. So if you don't have in Windows the flags turned on to view the full of file extensions, you may not be able to catch it. It's an executable renamed as a PDF, or at the, you know, because you could run executables within PDFs.
So the, you know, but then that's where it stops. I mean, from here on, the work that it's doing is insane. We've never seen anything except for the file that you would download that would, you know, burn your hard drive. I don't know. My mother-in-law's been warning me of this for years. This really is a big deal. It's incredibly destructive. However, I mean, there's that point. If you take a step back, it's like, well, you know what? There's nothing new here, right?
Right.
So if
right, it is so, very just.
So as far as like you know, preventing it or the treatment, well, that's a whole other thing. But if working back, you know, in preventive measures and not getting it in the first place. That is something that, you know, can be done. It's all textbook, right? as I'm understanding this.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like any virus, you know, you want to, you know, you got to be smart about it. Don't do stupid things. And then there's the viruses that you're going to fall upon on accident, things like that, or you're going to get tricked into. This is a phishing attack. It's not, you know, you're not going somewhere to find it. It's coming to you and wanting you to click on it. And that's why it's coming from things like the UPS and the FedEx. It's playing on, you know, it's playing on the fact that, oh, maybe I did order something, or maybe, you know, maybe I do have some money coming to me. So you click on it, or, you know, I'm looking for the where Steve Gibson posted that information about where to find the crypto locker.
Yeah, and hey, folks, tell your customers if they ask, if any potential customers, clients are listening. If UPS or eBay or anybody sends you something that requires opening a document, that exact same information is going to be available if you go to their website and log into your account. So disregard the email. Just go to the website and log into your account. I just don't get doing that. I don't get clicking things in emails. To me, an email says, hey, here's a piece of information. And you act on it by actually going out on the internet and going to their website and going from there. Does that make me crazier? I mean, that's just like standard. I just don't get this thing of clicking things in emails. But I don't know. I guess I've been around this forever and just seen too much.
That's crazy talk.
Is it? I'm crazy. Come on down. Everything must go. Clicking. All your data. Everything must go.
Sunday. Well, I will find it. See if I can get it in the show notes. But I do know that he found it. Actually has a new revision, because this thing does keep revising. Somebody, whoever it is making it smarter. So make sure you guys stay up on that.
But I'm thinking about going all Linux.
Who, me?
Yeah, I mean, you're a Linux guy.
Oh. I am.
I'm honestly considering just saying, hell with it. I can't. You know, because up until this point, I could back everything I could kind of undo. I could back out of it. You know what? I don't feel like setting up all these ridiculous, crazy safeguards, fail safes, and you know, nets, and put all this crap in place because of this nonsense. Okay, I've got a wife who does her best, but is prone to, which has never happened, but if she did click on something once, you know what? She's due. I've got two kids who are the click happiest individuals you've ever seen. And you know what? It's not a big deal to me because I do this for a living. Hey, what are they going to do? You know, yeah, I can figure it out. You can't undo this. Once it's done, it's done.
Right.
This is the first time, the first point where I thought, you know what? There's no reason. This is stupid. I'm not doing this anymore. I am not doing this anymore. And just kiss the windows goodbye.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, so I don't have any, you know, I'll get something or look at an email and I open it up and it just doesn't do anything. It, you know, or it tells me, oh, it's trying to run an executable, but you can't run an executable. So, you know, there's very little things that I can do, or there's very little things I can't do, on my Linux box. I use it all the time, and I'm in Windows machines all the time.
Are your all the PCs in your house Linux, Martin?
My son and daughter have, they're both Linux machines. My wife uses a Windows machine because she has to use Citrix to connect back for work. She was using Linux for a long time. It was working. It just wasn't working as good as as well as it needed to, and it was having some issues. But then I do have a lot of Windows machines in my house. So I'm not fully Linux. My laptop, my hardcore workstation, the one that I use all the time, is Linux. And I have some Linux service as well.
Well, this will just be a small experiment here. I actually believe that it can be done in this house fairly easily. They've really grown up.
Well, and what do they use?
They've grown up around using everything. And I actually did this a few years ago. I had a laptop that it had XP on it. And without anybody noticing, I installed XP and I installed Linux Mint, the kids never even noticed. I mean, yeah, we use Firefox.
Exactly.
Everything. And what are they doing with it? I mean, it's not like they're doing anything. As long as, what are they doing with it? It's not like they need to, they're not using Citrix. It requires Citrix, I can tell you that. And I don't know. You know, it's like this, obviously you have to still be smart. If people need information, there are ways that they're going to get it from you without you infecting your computer in any way. Basic safe internet safety types of things still apply. But you know what? This is the first point where there has been some kind of infection in Windows that's Windows only. Look, I love you, Windows, but I love you, Linux, and I love you. I love you. I need you to work all the time without this thing hanging out there, this insanity, okay? If I start seeing where this is happening, Linux, all the time, well, okay, well, then we got something to discuss here. But you know what? It happens. This is something. It's live. It's in the wild. It's already wrecking people's lives in Windows. I don't need this in my life. If I go to Linux, not saying that it can't happen, but it's not happening. Well, you know what? That's where I'm going to go, because I really feel like if I don't, this is the first point where I really felt like I can't do this anymore. I just can't do this anymore. I don't need this anymore.
Yeah,
I got too many problems. I got too many problems I have to fix. I don't need things I have to worry about, like losing everything.
Right. Well, I mean, if you're going to be on Windows still, then make sure you have good backups and whatnot. And you're already doing that. But yeah, at some point you kind of go, you know what? It's not even worth it. I'm going to switch over, and you can run a VM that has Windows in it. So if you need to do anything Windows centric, I have some old documents, and some of my clients have documents, and they're Visio. Well, LibreOffice handles Visio okay. But I actually run a VM, and then I just open up Visio and that, modify the documents, save it, and then pass it back over.
Hey, real quick, Martin. If Fred jumps in, as long as he stays to the end and we all shut down at the same time, 1, 2, 3, stop, he could Dork could just insert his audio at the end. It should be all right? Correct?
That is correct.
So can you stay to the end, Fred? Or is he still there, or is he frozen?
He's there. Fred's there.
He looks locked up on my end.
Oh, that's true.
He's locked up. Yeah.
So,
for the record, I'm not anti Windows. I'm anti having to deal with the stupid crap anymore. Okay. I'm anti losing all of my stuff to all this crazy encryption and having to go and go with backups, restore everything, and perhaps losing stuff that maybe was in a gap and I missed. Okay, guess what? I'm not perfect, and maybe something that I'm against that. That's what I don't want in my life. I'm sorry. This has now become a Windows thing, and look, I think maybe it's just time to say goodbye.
Yeah, and Highlander in the chat room brings a good point, saying, you know, encryption education is still the best if you can't get them to use Linux. A virus is easy to avoid if you're smart.
Right.
And I would say, even if you are using Linux, education is still the best answer.
Absolutely.
So you don't want, I mean, you know, there's, okay, you like to speed, you know, you like to go fast. So, okay, so you trade in your Ferrari for, you know, said minivan, okay? You still are going to have a heavy foot, and you're still going to cause damage when you still go fast and you still run through red lights, you know? I know it's an odd analogy, but my point is that, you know, it doesn't matter what operating system you're running on. Yes, you can have, you know, passenger side airbags like a Volvo, and you can have the heaviest roll cage and stuff like that on a Linux box. But the problem is, if you don't change your habits and you're not aware of what you do, then, you know, what's going to happen later on when a Linux virus comes out, or you do something else, or you jump on a server? You know, I'm in Windows servers all the time. You know, I can't go, well, no, I can do this, whatever I want to do, because I'm on a Linux box, and then turn around and jump in a Windows server and say, oops, I forgot, and then crash my client's servers.
But you have to have safeguards, even if you're on, like my son, like David says in there, just because you're on Linux, you still got to be careful.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. If you're on the internet, you have to be careful. It's not a Windows, Linux, Mac thing. It's the internet, and don't be stupid, you know?
Right.
There's a lot of bad things out there on the internet that will encrypt your system, encrypt your data, and CryptoLocker, you know, up until now, Tim, you touched on this, up until now, everything we've had has been kind of the slap on the hand, where, yeah, I lost data, or yeah, I got infected, I have
undone.
You know.
It could be undone.
Yeah. this is the one where you finally you get a big kick in the butt and you say, you know, we've hit that point where this is now serious. We're done playing children's games. We're not sitting at the children's Thanksgiving table anymore. We're now at the grown-up table.
Blank just got real.
Yeah, it did. It did. And if you keep acting and you keep surfing, like, you know, like it doesn't exist, or like, you know, it's okay, that FBI virus is fake, I'll get around it, then you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah. Here's a question. How big was this company, Martin, that got it?
It had, I think they had almost 30 clients, but they are 30, you know, staff on site. Right. But this is a multi-million dollar company. It was a big construction company. Like, they build hospitals and they build, you know, apartment complexes and fancy hotels. It's not a, you know, so while there's not a lot of people in the company, what they do is a lot. I think their administrative staff on site at the main office was probably a tenth of what, you know, because you have to have all the construction people out there, you know, and I would say that that's, you know.
Because I can't see, like, my company, we're all over the country. I don't know how many, several thousand people, you know, employees, at least more than that, actually worldwide. So I can't see, even though, you know, we've had some small infections here and there, I can't see where they wouldn't have, or any big company, like David says, where they would have stuff in place to prevent this. You would hope so, anyway.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, if you are all over the country and you're using a VPN and you're connecting back, then what's to say that somebody in San Francisco doesn't get their computers infected, infect the server, then, oh, VPN to New York, and now, you know, the New York server is infected. Now, this virus only goes, if you will, one way. And what I mean by that is, from client computer to server, it doesn't go from client computer to server and then over to another client, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But because remember, your map drives are your client, you know, your desktop or laptop connected to the server, right? There's not a, so the encryption will jump from your computer to the server, but it can't then jump from the server back to another client's computer. So how it infected the servers and then the backup drive is because if you look at them in a waterfall effect, is that the primary server was infected, and then it infected the server underneath it, if you will, and then it infected the backups underneath that. It didn't, you know, and so that's how it jumped from server to server, but in nowhere in there was, you know, Bob's computer got infected that infected the server, then Jerry's computer did not get in, you know, it did not start to encrypt Jerry's computer. Now, there's a caveat to that. What happens if Bob's computer also has Dropbox on it and Jerry and Bob share Dropbox? Now you've just made the jump between Dropbox, because Dropbox is actually a folder in your My Documents, right? So it's going to transfer that way.
I have a question.
Yeah, Fred.
Hey, welcome. Hey, who is this guy?
I don't know. He's some stranger.
Hey, I might drop out. My internet connection is
just got whacked, here.
But
you're recording.
Are you flying?
You're recording, right, Fred?
I am recording, Mitch.
All right, and we're gonna try to listen. If you do, close out so you can stop at the same time. Okay.
I will. Okay. I will. Okay. Martin, about these backups. So here's my question. I use a drive, which is free, 50 gig thing, and the only thing I back up is pictures. I mean, to be honest with you. But let's say you had, like, I've got a couple of customers that have QuickBooks. That's all they want to back up. But they want to back it up. So obviously I don't want to back it up to where it's overwriting itself every day, right? So, because otherwise if it would become encrypted, then it would overwrite with the encrypted files. So how do you set that up for, like, for example, with Carbonite or some of the other major, you know, home user, if you will, so that it's a unique backup daily?
Sure.
You follow my?
I do. And this is a great question. We briefly touched on it earlier, but CrashPlan, when I spoke with them last week regarding this issue, and I said, you know, if there is another infection, or for customers, you know, that I currently have, if they get infected, how does CrashPlan do that? Because aren't we then essentially backing up infected data? And they said, as CrashPlan is backing up data, it's monitoring and it looks at the integrity of the data. If it sees that it's infected or it has some issues with it, it won't back it up. So Fred, you create a QuickBooks file and you back up your Monday data. Tuesday during the day, you know, you back up at night. So Tuesday during the day, your QuickBooks gets infected. Tuesday night, it should not back that up because it's quick, because CrashPlan is going to see that you have infected data.
Oh, I see. I apologize for asking that again.
My daughter
had a band concert, the Christmas concert I had to go sit through.
That's a great question because that was, you know, backups are really good, but if you're backing up bad data, then what's the point of a backup? So we want
to
make sure.
Right. That was my whole point is that, you know, I didn't know if there was a way you could set it up to where you could, you know, for example, like, you know, for the guys that I'm working with, their files are tiny. So there's no reason why I just basically can't back up every day, you know, for a month, you know, because it's still going to be megabytes. You know what I mean? It's not going to be anything in terms of size.
Right. Well, and also,
so it's not overriding.
Well, QuickBooks also has a way of keeping so many backups as well. So you can say backup Mondays, backup Tuesdays, backup Wednesdays, and then turn around and when Thursdays gets backed up, it dumps Mondays. So QuickBooks does have that capability as well. If you do it in CrashPlan or Carbonite, if it's on a map drive, then it doesn't matter because it's data. And it, you know, like we talked about earlier, this company, they lost all of their backups because even though they had backup daily backups that went back a while, it was still in the folder, it was still available, and so that it was encrypted.
Gotcha. Interesting. Right. This whole crypto locker just got everybody all, you know, freaked out.
You know, and when I did talk to CrashPlan, I asked him a couple quick questions about, you know, things like their liability. Do they have, you know, because right off the bat, the first things that the bosses of this company said, are they bonded? Are they insured? What's their, you know, and Carbonite or CrashPlan says, we are one type of backup. We, you know, you should always have multiple types of backups. And they, you know, as much as I like them and I will continue to use them, they pretty much said, if you give us bad data and we back up bad data, that's your fault.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're right. I don't think blaming the backup agent is the way to go. I mean, I guess obviously that you could have gross negligence, but obviously if your data is not, you know, important data is not backed up with redundancy, most likely it's your fault, not theirs. I mean, that's just my opinion.
But. Right. Right. I mean, so as far as, you know, QuickBooks goes, you could, when you go to back it up, you could tell it to back up to certain, you know, you could tell it to back up to different folders, and then you could use, you know, you could back up those different folders to different places. So you could use, you know, some automated tools or whatever like that. So, and you know, CrashPlan, you can get their app for free and then back up locally or, you know, within your own place, just as well as you could with, you know, BitTorrent Sync or something like that.
Now, CrashPlan isn't, I'm sorry, I'm getting to the party late here.
It's all right,
CrashPlan's the one where you back up to your buddies, right?
You can back up, that's free, or you can pay to, and then you can back up to their servers.
Oh, you can, okay.
Yeah, I've never used it to back up internally. I've always, I use it to back up externally.
Cool.
Silence.
No, yeah, I was looking at some stuff. But so I wanted to talk about CryptoLocker, my experience with it. And I wanted to kind of stir some questions, and really I don't want this to be just kind of a, oh good, Martin talked about it, let's move on. I really, you know, I've thought about this for a week now, and there's always going to be questions, and there's always going to be, well, what about this and what about that? And I encourage that, and I want people to actually call in or write in to us, give us some questions. So I would love to talk about it some more. This is not going away. It's not one of those fly by night. This crypto locker is not a fad. I think I'm going to get a bumper sticker that says that.
T-shirt. Crypto locker happens.
So
it happens. Jenny said.
Hey, I want to say, too, big thumbs up.
No, actually, I wrote a blog post on it, guys.
Yeah, I saw. I briefly
on
saw
Crypto
that.
Locker.
Where would people find your blog post, Fred?
Yeah. I don't know. It's somewhere. It's on the internet.
Well, why don't you find internet. It for us?
It'll come to you as a PDF and an email.
There you go. Well, why don't Fred? You look for it really quick.
The only bad thing about it, it's going to be encrypted.
Oh my goodness!
See, I show up and it just goes downhill. I mean, it was going so well.
Oh gosh. How you been, Freddie, man? We haven't seen you.
The Chupacabra strikes again.
Fred, are you hearing us?
It hasn't been forever. It's been like... Yeah, I hear you.
How you been, man? Are you all right? Are you doing okay?
My internet is really bad.
That's okay. That's...
I've been good. I've been sick. I was on the road last week. I was trying to make the show, but I got very ill on the road, which really stinks.
Oh man!
For anybody who travels would know. So yeah, hanging out in a hotel in Texas when it's -5 Celsius in Texas. Yeah, that stuff.
We don't know so. Celsius. Come on, Fred, come back down from the clouds.
What is that like? 75?
What, yeah,
like
what 20, is it? Yeah, it was like 20 Fahrenheit.
Is that like 110?
Texas. What is that? Texas is like 35, 40 kilometers away. Is that something like that?
Fred, have you ever been out?
It's a little bit more than that.
Have you ever been on the wing of a plane?
Texas is one of the few states that I can take off from one end, right, fly for 2.5 hours, and still be over Texas.
Well, except for California.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Not width-wise, lengthwise.
North, south, yeah.
Alaska makes them all look like a bunch of pikers.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, Alaska, that makes men out there.
That, you know, that is something, to fly for 2.5 hours and still be over the same state. That's, unless you're flying really, really slowly.
40 miles an hour.
it's like 20 kilometers
impossible.
An hour. That is.
I got through Rhode Island one time in 8 minutes in a Buick. Yeah, sorry, Martin.
You know what? That's yeah. Anybody that's ever been to Rhode Island, it's like you stand on a skateboard and sneeze, and you're out of there.
Oh my!
That's pretty good. I'm gonna have to use that one. So anyway, I was ill in Texas and but it was good. I got this place we stayed at. If you're ever in Fredericksburg, Texas, people, yeah. It's called the Hangar Hotel. And it's a purpose built hotel right on the airport. And it's really neat. It's it looks like a hangar, an old 1940s airport hangar, but it's a really nice hotel. So,
Fred, where is are you familiar with Mission, Texas? Mission, Texas.
Not right off the top of my head. No,
my brother's there.
I was actually born in Texas, by the way.
I know.
Houston.
Yeah, they have a problem.
Don't start. Come on, we just got Tim stopped.
No, they have a problem. They're Texans. They lost 9 or 10 games in a row.
Oh, God.
Hey, did I tell you guys about the laptop that I had that I fixed, that I kind of quasi-fixed?
Which one? There was a DV6000 you had last time around or something? Or?
Yes, a compact. But it was a buddy of mine. I think I know I've talked about it. Buddy of mine sent it to me, a guy I work with. And he told me that he had taken it to a shop, and they told him that the power jack was bad, and it was going to be $300 to fix it.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Which told me basically they were going to replace the motherboard. They weren't going to fix the power jack. I'm guessing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't see what else could cost $300, but yeah. So he sends it to me, and I thought I told the story already, but maybe it was somebody else. I violated every rule in the book, right? I did not verify the problem. So when the guys, he had ordered a power jack, and it was a really easy one. It's one of those pigtails, you know, plugs in the middle of the board. You don't have to solder or anything. He so while the guys are here replacing my carpet, I thought, oh, this is a perfect time. I'll just tear it apart, replace the power jack. So I do that. It takes 20 minutes at the most. So I plug it in, nothing. So then, of course, I'm looking around going, well, this isn't good. So I look down at the power brick, grab it, grab my voltmeter, shove it into the power brick. Zero, nothing.
Oh, man.
So I go grab my universal power brick, you know, that I have, plug it in. Bob's your uncle, baby. Fires right up. It's like, oh, that stinks. So fortunately, like I said, I mean, obviously you always want to verify the problem, which I didn't do. Because it was, like I said, it was a buddy of mine, and he was quite confident that the issue was this power jack.
Yeah.
Utilizing somebody else's
diagnosis.
Diagnosis.
That's right. That's like one of the most. Well, I mean, it's just
Yeah. No. I mean, I know that, and I realize that I, you know, violated every rule in the book, but fortunately, it was, you know, it was for a buddy, and it wasn't, you know, not getting paid for it. So here's the kind of a funny part of the story. So I take it on the, I actually flew with him this week. So I brought the computer with me with my universal power brick. He goes, oh, here, I'll just keep this power brick and keep you. Well, he didn't use that term, but I'll keep this and use it. I'm like, no, you're not. You're going to go on eBay and buy one because that universal is $80 and I've got 30 tips to go with it. Yeah, he still has it, by the way. But he's going to send it back to me. So that was a lesson learned. I mean, I guess I already knew the lesson, but, you know,
sometimes
you have to have it hit home.
I had something very similar here. You know, the end of last week, I had a customer brings me a laptop. You know, he says that battery won't charge or that he was using it and it just died. So I have it, and I plug it in, battery starts charging right away. Okay, well, that's something. So I tried his charger on you know, one of my laptops. It was a Dell. And used one of my chargers on his laptop. You know, everything. You know, and his battery charges, no problem. I discharged the battery, let it run, and used his charger. It worked perfectly. And so my first question to the guy, I said, you know what, is there any chance that maybe, you know, there was a breaker that was thrown maybe that it was plugged into a receptacle, had a switch, it was on a switch. And because I, you know, I've had that, actually had that happen before. And so one of my customers. And so he said, no, there was nothing wrong with the receptacle. He said it had good power going to it. He tried lamp, which I had expected. He, like he would have, the type of person who would definitely rule all these things out before, you know. Before. So, the jack did seem kind of loose inside the machine. So I'm sure this was an intermittent thing and it just so happened that it intermittently was not working and discharged his battery. So, you know, we're going to replace out that power jack, but yeah, I've definitely, something similar a few times where the customer did not, they just didn't think about it. It just wasn't from the wall. Of course, that was, of course, your problem with the charger itself. But
yeah, it's dead as a doornail. I checked it with the voltmeter, and I mean, it wasn't doing anything.
Hey, you know, so. I was going to bring this a few weeks ago. You know, the best way to really test those chargers is with.
You lick them?
You stick your tongue down in them. Come on, Mark.
It's like a 9 volt. Isn't it just like a big 9 volt?
It's one of these guys. It's a. It tests for voltage, you know, inductively. And so you just hold it up and it beeps and there's a light. And
why.
Why is it not?
How do you get it down in there?
You just have to hold it. If you just hold it near anything with power, if you hold it near it.
Working.
You know, and that's.
Yeah, in the fire department, we have those. They're called tick testers for like power lines that are down. You can test them.
Yeah.
That's, same basic principle.
Of course, any kind of electrical testing. It's good to test. Oh, there it goes. Let's test it first to make sure that it is working. But yeah, it's got a light in it, and those chargers. Sometimes it's hard to really get an accurate reading from you got bells, especially because you've got that little pin, the little data pin in the middle there. So you know, I just grab one of these. It gives me a really good indication. And plus, if the thing's cutting out, you can find out where, because maybe it has. You know, there's two cables. You've got the cable that brings the DC power out of the brick, but you know, you also have the detachable bit of cord that comes from the wall that plugs into it. There could be a break anywhere in there, and that usually it's right before the tip. And that's the other thing is that you know, using this, you can kind of find. Well, this thing, if it's bad, you can kind of find that maybe it does have good voltage leading up to you know, an inch or two before the end of the you know the tip of it. Which I would just buy a new one, but. You know, using this device, you can really kind of test the whole length of the charger cable, and determine that hey, this thing is good, or it is bad, which you know right there that obviously that's a lot of your diagnosis. If you got a good charger, you know the problem is either before it or after it. So. Anyway, yeah, this has been a handy thing. And
where'd you get that at?
You know what? This is actually a Sears Craftsman branded device, AC voltage detector. It's called. And it's actually meant to detect, AC 120 or 40. It takes two AAA batteries, and this actually came. I think they're like 10 bucks at Sears, but this came bundled with a. Wow. Came bundled with a. I actually use this a lot more than the.
That's.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's just quick and easy, quick and dirty. You know what I mean.
Part number 82174. Any device.
I'll check on that. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter at the end of the day where the problem is because, you know, if the power brick's bad, you're going to, doesn't really matter where it's bad.
Right.
You're going to replace it.
Right.
But that is, seems like it'd be a quicker way to, just a quick way to diagnose it real quickly.
Absolutely.
I mean, I like it. I'm going to go get one.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I have, you can actually test that charger and know that's good before you.
Right.
Excellent. I recommend it highly.
No, that's very cool. You know, the other thing I have here is I got a laptop here. I got to put a screen in. It's a Sony. I think I told you guys about that too. Same guy, same buddy that had the power jack. So actually, I might do that tomorrow. I got to take the screen out and get a screen ordered for it. Those, it's a Sony Vaio. Those screens used to be really expensive, didn't they? Like a few years ago.
The
a couple hundred bucks for those things,
or what specific, like that specific model, the screen, or
the Sony Vaios. I thought like a couple years ago those screens were like almost a couple hundred bucks.
You may be right. I don't know specifically about that model. They come down. I mean, okay. Did you get a good price on one?
Well, I did a quick and dirty and just on the model. Not the actual specific screen, but just, you know. And it was like $85. I was like, huh, it's pretty cheap. So
prices have come down on those screens. I think across the board, it seems to me. I wish they had. Yeah. It seemed like there was more demand to replace screens a few years ago, and I wish they had been cheaper then. It seems like now that everybody's willing to just throw the laptop out and buy a new one, now the price is,
Yeah, I had a couple years ago, probably probably two to three years ago. I was in an airport terminal, sitting at a gate, you know, waiting for my flight. And this girl behind me, I hear her on the phone. She's all in tears and telling somebody that she broke her screen on her laptop. And it was a Sony Vaio. And I heard her say the model number. So, of course, I'm sitting there with nothing else better to do than eavesdrop and, you know, be nosy. So I looked up the price of that laptop screen, and it was literally over $200. I was like, "Woo, that's a pricey one right there." I didn't tell her. But so they've obviously come down. And I remember some of the guys back, you know, on the Podnuts, you know, heyday with the chat channel, talking about the prices of those Vaio screens.
That rings a bell.
They were kind of,
that rings a bell.
Yeah. So hopefully it's not the case, because this guy doesn't have a whole bunch of money. So, I mean, he's just a poor pilot like me. So we'll have to get it on the cheap.
You know, on those, you may be able to, I mean, if it comes, I don't know about in this case, if it comes down to either replacing it, spending big money replacing it, or I mean, if you're dealing with somebody who's like, look, this is not going to happen, and then I'm just going to have to junk it, and I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, ordinarily, I wouldn't offer this to a customer necessarily, but like if it was my uncle's or something. I've often been surprised by what will fit into what. That, you know, when I'm doing screens, I like to pull the screen. I like to get the number off the back of the screen and order exactly that same thing. It's the only way I've ever found that I get the exact same replacement. Sometimes searching by the laptop model number, you will get a number of hits because they use different things throughout different year or over the course of years. Or there may have been, you know, different the different ones, WXGA and all these other things. You'll find that they end up putting the wrong screen there, something lower quality, or even a matte screen, and some of it should be a glossy. But I've been in a pinch here and there, and I've torn a laptop apart, and I have found stuff laying around my shop. It's like, well, this matches up. I mean, it's like, why does that shouldn't work? I just find something like, look at that, it works. And, you know, people are like, they're happy. And it's, I mean, it's just stuff that, actually what it is, it's all these DV7s that are laying around here. I've got all kind of good screens, and I'll say, you know, hey, I've got something here that, you know, it'll work. It's you know, it's basically just have a machine that's parted out, and they're thrilled. I mean, they get it fixed the same day, and I charge about half the price for the parts, and, well, it used to be half price for the parts, and, I don't know if that's something that would actually work in the Vaio. If there was like a similar screen that would work, often the cable maybe doesn't necessarily match up in the exact same place. For as much trouble as I actually go to get the exact replacement, on the flip side is that I've often been surprised what will actually work.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I guess you could, like you said, to Google search it and find similar, you know, similar banks. I guess you'd really only, I mean, personally, I would only worry about that if it was a extremely high dollar unit. You know what I mean? I mean, I wouldn't booger with it if we're talking about $5.
No.
But,
no.
But the same guy, just kind of wrap that up. I don't know how long you guys have been going, but.
About 3 hours.
This poor guy.
I would say,
yeah, you guys are.
Well, no, we've been going for about 15 kilometers.
About three times as long as it takes.
Well, that's not very far. So we've got. That's right. We can do 60 kilometers in an hour. So or 100 kilometers an hour. So we're good.
Well, somewhere, yeah, either 15 kilometers or 25 Celsius, somewhere right around there.
You know, it's funny. I follow these YouTube truckers. Kind of just off the subject here for a second. And I don't know why. I don't say, why do you follow YouTube?
Wait.
No idea why.
Hey, this is a serious show. Do not digress.
But yeah, exactly. But these guys, some of them are Canadians. And actually, the kilometers make sense. They go 100 kilometers an hour, right? That's, I don't know what speed that is, but I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 60-something.
Well, you've been talking.
And so they go, okay, it's
kilometers the whole time.
It's 400 kilometers. It's 4 hours, you know. That's easy, man.
Well, I guess so.
Anyway.
Well, what's 6 times 4?
I don't know, 27.
Never mind. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Fred to Canada when you see him.
When I fly over Canada, it takes a long time because bad at math. See, you made me lose track of what I was talking about. Martin.
I'm sorry. I digress.
You're such a bad host.
Fred?
The cuts, man. It cuts real deep.
A bad guest.
I think, Fred, there's a lag from when you can hear us. When we talk, there's a lag by the time you get it.
I'm sorry, what did you say, Mitch? I'm just kidding.
That's a built-in lag.
Built in
lag.
Nobody has moved. My connection is really bad tonight. We've had a lot of rain and snow. And for some reason, when we get rain and snow, my phone hasn't worked for 2 days.
Your video is good.
My DSL.
Are you home?
Yeah, your video is good.
Oh.
Are you home?
So, I am home, yes.
You must be in a different place.
No, I actually moved my desk around. I basically flipped it 180 degrees. So, as opposed to looking at the house, you're looking at the wall that was behind me. Or in front of me before. Yeah. There was something I wanted to tell you guys, and it was really important.
Well, we're at the end of the show now.
And I blame it all on Martin.
Hint,
he got me all digressed.
Hint.
You can blame it on me. I don't mind. I got big shoulders.
Yeah, I gotta go.
All right. Hey, guys.
We'll save it for next time when I show up.
Well, before you jump ship and sail away into the sunset, Fred, where can people get a hold of you if they want to?
I've got a new website, a new domain name.
Yeah, I asked you about that like 30 minutes ago and you didn't remember. The lag's not that bad, Fred.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
It's the memory that's that bad.
No, it's a work. I wasn't going to bring it up because it's a work in progress and some of the stuff is in like, I don't know, Latin, I think, from the theme.
It is
jetspeedit.com. In
is
my
it dot
blogs
com
on
or
there.
Dot, like,
I'm gonna try to do some blogs.
CA. Jet what?
It's .com.co.uk.
Jet speed.
No, it's just .com.
I don't.
Jetspeedit.com. So you can reach me at mail@jetspeedit.com.
Yeah, that looks good, Fred. I like it.
Yeah, it's a work. Like I said, it's a work in progress. I'm learning. I've been attacking everybody I know who knows anything about WordPress. And
my
Martin
phone hasn't been ringing.
Include no. I've asked you some questions.
Yeah.
And but I do have some email questions I ask you on Voxer, but we'll save that for another show.
Okay.
So we'll get into that. I think that'll be a good topic. Yeah, that's where I'm at. You can check out my blog there too.
I like it. It looks good, Fred. We'll put it in the show notes. And people can buy it.
Sure.
You can buy the whole thing right in the top right, left-hand corner. Right-hand corner.
Absolutely. You can send donations right there.
It just says buy now.
I know. I couldn't figure how to change that to like something else. I'm working on that.
I'll help you with that.
So
I'll help you with that one too. You can buy it from Fred. All right. And Mitch, if people want to get a hold of you, where can they get a hold of you?
Anywhere. Google Hangouts. Geeksters@podnuts.com.
Well, okay. So if people want
to
get a hold of
I've tried to get a hold of Mitch many times, and he refuses to answer the phone. So.
No, I'm tired. I'm trying to sleep.
Right. Oh, that's it.
I'm tired.
I'm going
to bed.
I was
going to
answer the phone, but I was tired.
Listening to what little kids want for Christmas all day is tiring for Mitch.
I just want. All I want for Christmas is sleep. You all know about that.
We'll get you a case of NyQuil.
Doesn't help. I mean, I sleep. I still feel like I don't sleep.
All right. So if you want to get a hold of Mitch, you can email him at geeks@podnuts.com.
There you go.
Because he's rambling on in his sleepiness. All right, Tim, if you want to get a hold of you, how can they get
you? Yeah, man, I'm Tim Bauermeister on the G+. You can email me, tim@realpcrepair.com, or I'm in like Tim in the Podnuts Hangout. Forums. Podnuts Forums.
But he was not in the hangout tonight. Tim was absent. Tim was absent from the chat room today.
No, I was in the chat right there. I'm in there. Oh, it says Tim underscore like Tim, because my last name doesn't. It doesn't fit in there. I guess it doesn't.
But, yeah, you've been there.
Tim underscore.
All right.
I was the guy in there that's been. I've been trolling this mass kill dude the whole time.
That's right. Yes. All right. If people want to get a hold of me, they can email me at martin@obandocomputing.com. I'm Masskill in the forums, and I'm Masskill in the IRC. Uh-oh.
That was you.
Who is it? Yeah. I can feel the love. Anyways. Okay, we're slowly moving our way downhill. So, guys, we'll have a great week. Episode 98 next week. We're getting there. And Lisa from Call That Girl will be on next week. I've already scheduled that with her. And then we'll get
sweet.
Like I said, we'll get Nick Shaw on after things calm down with him. It wasn't that bad. All right, guys, have a great fiscal week. We'll talk to you later. All right, ready, Fred?
Count this thing down for to help Tor out.
Oh, hang on.
For the audio.
I'm ready.
Ready? 3, 2, 1, stop.